Those of you who caught our first morning panel certainly heard a little bit from Kashmir Hill about Clearview AI, a company that has risen to surprisingly rapid prominence in the domain of face recognition, substantially on the back of acquiring information that we've shared, not for that purpose, with a variety of social media platforms. So Freddy Martinez is a policy analyst at Open the Government, who focuses on issues around transparency and law enforcement reform. He's also been tracking Clearview AI fairly closely, and he has some lessons he wants to share from the last 2 years of monitoring that company about the future of privacy. Freddy?
Thanks, Julian, and thanks, Keda, for having us back. I think it's been 2 years since we last spoke about facial recognition here. Let's see. That works. Great. So just about me, as Julian said, I'm a policy analyst at Open the Government. We're a DC-based nonprofit. Our coalition advocates for more open and transparent government. And my background is in technology, cybersecurity, before I started pivoting to policing and surveillance and FOIA. So if we want to rewind to about 2 years ago, the last time we were here, we were hearing that about half of all Americans were in one form or another of some facial recognition database. We heard that the FBI had something like 650 million images in its capacity to search. And we were seeing that Congress at least was holding some routine hearings on facial recognition technology and seemed to be interested in regulating it in some form or fashion. And so in 2019, when I joined Open the Government, we started a project with Beryl, who's in the audience, where we started doing a round of FOIAs to see what's been missing. So we had heard, you know, that facial recognition was prolific in the country, but we wanted to see what haven't, you know, we wanted to catch up the research. So we sent hundreds of FOIAs with MuckRock and Open the Government, and one of the things that we found was this memo from Atlanta Police Department. And for those who send FOIAs routinely, you never get anything that's called attorney work product or privileged and confidential. This was a memo from Kirkland & Ellis, which is a massive law firm. And it was about Clearview AI, a company that we had never heard of. And in particular, reading through the memo, you know, I talked to an attorney friend who sort of started pointing out some key features about this, other than the fact that it's an attorney work client privilege. So Kirkland & Ellis, massive law firm, this company that we had never heard of, Clearview AI. The memo was from Paul Clement, who used to be Solicitor General of the US, so clearly a very senior partner at Kirkland & Ellis. The date was 2019, and it was talking about the legal implications of Clearview. From just looking at it, this is clearly a very expensive memo. It probably cost Clearview hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this analysis. And they talk about using user-uploaded images of faces in publicly available images. And then at the very bottom, it talks about how existing state biometric and privacy laws do not apply to the company, which is an incredible analysis, I guess. the other thing that stuck out to us is that they said that Clearview had collected billions of images. So comparing that to the FBI, who says that they have 650 million images, and now we have billions of images. So clearly we're talking about something that's on a different order of magnitude, right? And so Clearview AI, they claim that they have collected billions of images off of social media and that it sells access to those images to law enforcement, and then the fact that it claims that it's not subject to state laws like the Biometric Information Privacy Act of Illinois, it was incredible. And some of the places that they claim to collect images from, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, SoundCloud, just LinkedIn, a bunch of places. Another thing about the company is that they claim that if you, for any reason, have your photo uploaded to the internet, that you've waived all kinds of privacy in your images. So let's say that we're going to Six Flags, for example, when someone takes a photo and I'm in the background and then that person uploads it to the internet, that somehow I've lost all interest in privacy of my image. So there's kind of this very strange way that they interpret consent. And the other thing that's really important to understand is that when you sign up for social media, in general, social media requires some kind of identifier, a face, image, email address, a phone number. So even if you set your profile to private, let's say I go to Facebook, create a new profile, upload my face, but I set the image to private, you're still sort of in scope of collection from Clearview. So Kashmir Hill broke the story for the New York Times, and some of the major findings was that, you know, they collected 3 billion images. Now they claim that they're up to 10 billion images. One thing that we found was that there were hundreds of police agencies using Clearview, and all that you had to do to gain access to the software is you would just have to email them from a police department email address, and then they would just sort of give you access to the software. And the use of these sort of free trials to drum up business is something that we've seen in other contexts of surveillance technologies. So for example, license plate reader technology. The fact that surveillance companies are giving away technology as a way of creating business for themselves has really sort of serious public policy concerns, especially around the Fourth Amendment. And the fact that sort of private businesses sort of just get away from this just by giving away technology is sort of one of the things that I think we need to grapple with, and I think, you know, we've talked about already. And one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about is after we broke, you know, the story broke, we had dozens of people, reporters, reaching out to us trying to find Clearview in their own backyard. And one of the things that we found is, one of the things that I kind of keep coming back to is that through our discussions, I think sort of our idea of how to think about Clearview has shifted significantly. And that's kind of what I want to talk about a little bit briefly. Some fallout, obviously, is that counties, cities, and states have started banning the technology. Governments have started investigating the technology. I think Canada called it a mass surveillance system that's clearly illegal. And the UK sort of says that Clearview owes at least $20 million for violating privacy laws. So we've seen sort of a huge amount of investigations and a huge amount of litigation around the company because of some of our investigations. And in fact, the company even tried to subpoena myself and Open the Government in one of its lawsuits. They did not succeed, but they did try. They tried to sort of get every document that we've ever obtained about the company. So very briefly. So how is Clearview used sort of in policing? This is an email that we've obtained. And this is a romance scam investigation. And the police department says, you know, here's a photo. And I think that this person's Instagram is here. And his another website associated with this person might be here. Good luck. And by the way, you can use this Instagram post to subpoena Instagram and try to find his IP address and find out who he is. If you go to his Instagram, there's photos of his children available. So clearly, you know, very deeply personal information. Another example is a reporter at CNN had his photo ran through Clearview, and they found a photo of him when he was 15 years old at like a rugby club, right? You know, thinking about it, I don't think it's good or fair to say that it is a facial recognition vendor, but something like more akin to a mass surveillance system. And let me give you a few examples. In one example, Clearview was used by the founder to impress an investor. The investor had his daughter walk into a restaurant. He didn't recognize her. The date took a photo of the person and was able to find out his name sort of in real time with some images of where he, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, and things like that. And so when you think about the kind of information that's being collected and where it's being collected from, you know, with Facebook, you can find a person's friends and family. With Instagram, you can find, you know, places that they visit, places that they vacation, communities that they're involved in. LinkedIn, you can find out where a person works. You know, you can find out hobbies, recreations, the rugby club. And, you know, when we go back to this image where you're talking about an Instagram post, I think what we're talking about is really kind of a fundamental shift of privacy in ways that we're kind of not ready to deal with. And so the way I think about it now is that you're tracking what Clearview does is that it tracks a person's historic and current internet sort of use over time using their biometrics as sort of selectors in the same way that like the NSA would use phone numbers or emails, or the FBI would use, you know, again, social security numbers to track a person over time, right? If you know someone's social security number, you could find out, you know, what bank they use, all sorts of things, right? And the fact that you can use a person's face to track this over time, I think is a fundamental shift in privacy that we, our society is not ready to grapple with. And to use the example again about identifying, you know, someone's date, right? The fact that you can have this technology means that a stalker, rogue law enforcement, foreign spies can abuse these kinds of technologies in ways that I think, you know, really should concern us, right? Imagine that you're a foreign diplomat trying to work overseas and someone can take a photo of you at passport control and, you know, pull up your college, you know, yearbook photo and your interests in you know, diplomatic services or law enforcement or whatever it is. So I think that this is the central thesis that I've sort of come to, is that we are just not ready to deal with this, this kind of long-term tracking using biometrics. You know, fingerprints maybe are a little bit more localized, but the fact that you can do this with a face at scale on the internet with 10 billion images is sort of kind of unprecedented. So what can we do about this? You know, we've long advocated for a full moratorium on the use of facial recognition technology by the federal government. The Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act would prohibit federal agencies from buying data that was obtained against the terms of services of another company. So in this case, Clearview violated Facebook's, Twitter's terms of services when they collected those images and started selling it. Right, so something like the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act would go a long way in preventing abuse, and we've seen a lot of efforts on a local and state level to regulate facial recognition technology, and a lot of that has been a consequence of investigative journalism. And so, with that, I will just say, you know, gratitude to a lot of people who have helped these investigations, particularly my colleague Beryl in the crowd, who did a lot of work with us. And yes, thank you for having us.
Thanks so much, Freddie, and of course, all our speakers today. And thank you for joining us for this first virtual version of the Cato Surveillance Conference. Alas, even virtual speakers must eat, so we're going to take a break for lunch right now, but please do return and join us in an hour, right at 1 p.m. when we will have what should be a fascinating dialogue on the connection between anonymity and free speech, and then following that, what should also be a pretty interesting demonstration live of hacking devices on the Internet of Things and precisely how vulnerable they can be, along with more flash talks coming up on a variety of topics. That's all after lunch. Please do join us at 1 p.m. Thank you.